Welcome to Jane's Not a Virgin, a podcast about young people accessing abortion through judicial bypass in Texas and not the TV show Jane the Virgin. Oh, my name is HK Gray.
I'm Veronica.
I'm Anna.
Jane's Due Process helps young people in Texas navigate parental consent laws so they can confidently access abortion and birth control. They provide free legal support, one-on-one case management, and stigma-free information on sexual and reproductive health. The subject of this episode is abortion court, and it's like nothing you've seen on Judge Judy. So, to start this episode of our podcast, we're going to talk about what it felt like when we were going to have to go to court. So, how did it feel when you first found out that you were going to have to go to court to get a judicial bypass? Okay, so I'll go first. When I first found out that I was going to have to go to court in order to get my judicial bypass, I honestly was going to just, like, call off the whole thing and just stay pregnant. I had never been into a court setting before, so I didn't really understand what that was going to look like. And it also almost made me feel like, as if I was criminalized, because the only time I had ever heard of people having to go to court was if they had done something wrong and then had to go before a judge. And I just didn't want to have to deal with any of that. But after Jane's Due Process kind of talked to me a little bit about it and explained to me that it wasn't the way I was imagining it, I was a lot more willing and open to actually go through that process. What do you guys think?
Honestly, I was grateful for the fact that I was able to be able to go in there with JDP backing me up and having a lawyer by my side. So I was just like, I'm going in for it because I really didn't want to be pregnant. I didn't want to have a kid. I knew that this was gonna be my only chance, especially in Texas. So I was scared. I didn't know if I would be able to get an abortion at all. And I knew it was going to take a lot of time and effort to just go to court because it only happens during the school day. And that was on top of the sonogram appointment that we have to make before that. And it was just pretty overwhelming. But I'm very grateful that JDP had a lot of resources that I was able to dig deep into to study more and just understand this process a little bit more. So that's how it was for me.
Yeah, so I think we all sort of went through the same kind of, you know, thought process and emotions when we were first told that we needed to go in front of a judge and in a court setting, because it just sounds like something very serious, because like a lot of teens I know or knew at the time didn't really deal with stuff like that, and the only time you heard of, like, you know, going to court is was when you're in trouble. And so definitely as a teen going through that process alone without any type of guidance from your parents, it feels that, you know, you must be doing something wrong. And it also just seems like really difficult and really like something you can't do as being that young. And so for a lot of people, those can be, or a lot of teens, those can be reasons why they end up not going through the process. And like HK was saying, that she was just going to be like, okay, never mind, like I'll just keep my pregnancy. So it's just really unfortunate that a lot of teens go through that.
Thank you, Veronica and Anna, for sharing. And I think that's a really common experience with people that have to go through the judicial bypass process, is that whenever you do find out that you have to go to court and you have to go before a judge, it is very overwhelming and it's super scary. And I think that is the reason why these laws are put into place, is because antis want for minors who already come from low income backgrounds, they want them to be overwhelmed, they want them to be scared, and they want them to feel like they are not capable of going through a judicial bypass and that it would just be easier to stay pregnant. This is why Jane's Due Process hooks you up with an amazing lawyer who is compassionate and cares about your situation and not just the going to court for you and being your lawyer. They genuinely care about you as a person. And speaking a little bit about, like, what it was like meeting your lawyer for the first time and what you expected whenever you did meet your lawyer, I'll go first. Okay. So, when I first met my lawyer, it was definitely an interesting experience. I actually had to reschedule twice because I didn't have reliable transportation at the time. And so when I first actually got to meet them, I felt really overwhelmed. And I also felt like I didn't have my life together because I had to reschedule twice. And I felt like maybe they were going to be mad at me, but they weren't mad at me at all. Like, that was just me being paranoid. And also, when I first imagined meeting my lawyer, I imagined, like, this frumpy, cranky, angry, like, white old man that was, like, a balding head. And I realized when I met them, like, they were not that person at all. And it was actually a woman attorney, and she was so overwhelmingly nice to me. She really made me feel comfortable in her space, even though, you know, I had never been to a lawyer. She talked me through everything. It was a really eye-opening experience because me and her had very similar backgrounds in our childhoods. And she talked to me a lot about how she overcame a lot of obstacles in her life to become a lawyer and what that was like for her. And so it was really inspiring to meet someone who had a similar background to me and was still able to find success in life. So that was really nice just in itself. But then just the way that she explained the process to me was really affirming. She made sure that I knew that, you know, the judge is going to ask me very inappropriate things. They're going to ask me things that are going to make me angry and make me feel and try to invalidate my experiences as a person. And she allowed me to have those emotions and be angry and be upset about it, but also to move past those emotions and step into my power and still show up for myself and advocate for myself in the court hearing. So I had a really great experience with my lawyer. I still talk to her every once in a while. So she's became like almost like a mentor towards me at this point in my life. So, yeah. What did you guys experience whenever y'all first met your lawyers?
I totally feel you. My lawyer was awesome. She was super welcoming and went right to the point. I didn't know what to expect, so I didn't have any ideas at all about what was going to happen, but it really blew me away because the first time we met, she got all of my paperwork sorted out and done together because I needed to sign some things. And she gave me solid warning about what could happen as well. Like what HK mentioned earlier, she really did say, like, these judges might do something crazy and you could be very offended, but we're trying to get everything sorted so you can go on and have your procedure. And when I went up the elevator to her office downtown, I saw the view and I was like, she grinded for that view, you know? Like, she worked hard. And I was just so grateful that she was just such a understanding person that was fighting for me and for my rights the whole entire time. And she also gave me a little gift. Like, it was a little pair of socks that were super feminist. And I still wear them to this day. And I think of her and I think of our time very fondly. It was a really good time that kind of took away from all the difficult parts. And she was like a mentor as well, like very reassuring, very stable, like my rock for that really short amount of time. But it was really important to me.
I honestly don't really remember meeting my attorney just because the judicial bypass was a really time-consuming and time-sensitive process because, you know, once you're doing one thing or once you finish with one thing, you're already on to the next thing. And so one thing I do remember was, you know, it being difficult to kind of get transportation to there. So my partner's mom was okay with the whole thing and she was the one kind of like driving us around, which wasn't the difficult part. The difficult part was, you know, getting out of my mom's house or getting out of my house, you know, and thinking of like good reasons to like for my mom to let me go. And, you know, most of the time she would say no because it was like with my boyfriend. And so it was like really difficult. But then eventually when I was able to go, I remember just being really scared to meet my attorney because it kind of felt like, you know, it kind of felt like it was just really official, and it was just like I was really intimidated. And so when I get there, I kind of like felt the need to explain everything and kind of being like, oh, this is why I got pregnant, and this is why I need the abortion, and this is why I'm sorry. And it kind of felt like I was explaining myself to my mom, like if I was in trouble. But eventually, after, you know, I went on this like long rambling, you know, little session with her, she was able to kind of tell me, okay, from like what you tell me or what you told me, these are some things that you should say, these are some things that you shouldn't say. And it was just really a relief because I was able to kind of get an insight or get a little bit of knowledge about what the process might look like and what they might ask me and, you know, what things that they need to hear, which was relieving because it was able to calm my nerves a little bit. And after that, it was just a little bit easier. So I am really grateful for my attorney for, you know, being there for me when I was just, you know, a little scared teen. So continuing on, our next question is, what was the judicial bypass hearing like? And was it like you thought it would be, or was it better or worse? And I can start this one off. So the first thing that I remember from like this whole process was, you know, trying to get out of the house without my mom like being suspicious, because, you know, the appointment that like the time that I had to be there at the courthouse was like 8 a.m. and it was just kind of hard to justify why I needed to be out at 8 a.m. But I kind of told my mom that like, oh yeah, my partner's family, they want to have like a really early breakfast and they really want me to be there. And so, you know, after some convincing, she finally like allowed me to go. So then the next morning, my partner's mom picks us up and she takes us to the courthouse. And I remember just feeling like really anxious and really nervous because like the date was finally here. But also it's like I've never been to like a courthouse and never been in this kind of environment before. So it's just like really scary. So then finally getting to the courthouse, it was just so confusing because I've never been there. I didn't know where to go. And, you know, finally I found the place and it was really nothing, not like how I expected it, because, you know, when you, like how HK said, it wasn't like how you see on Judge Judy or like How to Get Away with Murder, because I was expecting to be in front of a judge, like in a really big court setting, and then, you know, speaking to him from there. But it turns out that we were in like a very like small and intimate private room. And I think I was like a little bit more scared just because like I was closer to him and like more face to face. And there was only like 4 people in the room, including myself. It was my attorney, the judge, and I think like some sort of witness, something that the courthouse like requires. And so he started out by just basically like rapid fire questions, I guess. He would just ask me a question and then I would have to respond back, and that's kind of how it was the entire time. But he did it in a very like serious and intimidating tone, which made it like 1,000 times worse, because like it 100% felt like an interrogation. And so you know, with all of that, like I was trying my hardest not to like cry, because, you know, there was so much pressure on me to get this right and for it to be perfect, because, you know, if I say something incorrectly or if I say something that, you know, didn't sound mature enough, he could have easily said no. And so yeah, I was just like on the verge of tears the entire time. But, you know, eventually when we finished, I was just like trying to just get out of there as fast as possible. And like the last thing he told me was, he's like, oh, you know, in my religion, I don't believe that abortion is right, but, you know, as a judge, I have to remain impartial. And, you know, I didn't really like understand what he said, but, you know, like later that day thinking about it, it just felt like I wasn't gonna get it. And because, you know, he made that comment, and like looking back at it now, it was just like really unnecessary, especially to like a teenage girl, you know, in a new environment, like scared for her life, and just to make a comment like that for like himself to feel better, I guess. So yeah, but eventually I found out that I did get it, and so it was just like such a relief, because, you know, after like so long of like waiting, of after going to appointments, of after, you know, meeting my attorney, and, you know, it finally happening and like finally being able to get the bypass, it was just so amazing. And, you know, the last part was to actually get the abortion. And so that was my experience. How about yours, HK?
So when I first went to court, getting there was super stressful because I didn't have reliable transportation at the time. And so to get there and be on time was super overwhelming to me, because I was under the impression that if I missed my court hearing, I would get an automatic denial of my judicial bypass or that I wasn't going to be able to reschedule it. Like, I missed my court hearing. That was it. Because I was under the impression that I was going to be entering into a stereotypical courtroom like you see on court TV. And it wasn't like that at all. It was a kind of like a office room with a big table. And it was me and my attorney and the judge and, like, the court reporter, which, like, takes notes on the situation and all that sort of stuff. And it was just those four people. And I went in, and I remember in the beginning of the court hearing, I didn't actually speak to the judge. I was so nervous and so freaked out that I was just, like, looking at, I was talking to the judge, but I was looking at my lawyer and speaking to my lawyer. And at some point, the judge looked at me and was like, hello, I'm right here. Like, you need to look at me. And I realized, like, I wasn't even looking at him. And I felt like he was going to deny me right there just because I wasn't looking at him and I wasn't acknowledging him, really. And so for the duration of the rest of the whole court hearing, I was, like, talking to him. And at one point, I remember I was so afraid that I was, like, actually shaking underneath the table because I just knew that this was something that I needed to be perfect at. I needed to do it perfectly so that I could get everything correct. And it almost feels like a test that you have to ace. And if you don't ace this test, like, you're gonna fail the class. That's what it felt like to me. And I was talking, at one point, I was talking about my mom. And my mom was incarcerated at the time. And that was part of the reason why she could not be involved in getting my parental consent for my abortion. And so I was talking about my mom because the judge was asking me about my parents and all that sort of situation. And I was talking about her and just about how she was incarcerated and how, as a child, like, she wasn't a very present mother figure. And the judge looked at me and he said, no, we're not doing this. We didn't come into this courtroom to talk about how bad our parents are. We came here to talk about why you got pregnant and why you need an abortion. And I remember being so shocked in that moment. I just didn't even, when I was formulating my responses to the judge, I just never expected for him to give me that kind of response. And that really shocked me. And I don't really remember what I said or how I played it off, but I guess I played it off well. And then another thing that was really eye-opening to me about the whole judicial bypass process, when I was talking about my father who was homeless, and I was talking about how he's homeless and how I was living like elsewhere from him and how I had my own house and stuff and my dad, you know, was homeless and all that. And he asked me why my dad was homeless. Like, that was an easy thing to answer. Like, I could give an answer right there. And I also don't know how I responded to that. I think I said something along the lines of, like, well, I don't know. When I was a kid, we had financial issues and who knows, right? Like, I don't know how to answer that question. And also, another thing that he said that was eye-opening to me was he said that if I could have one kid, why couldn't I have two? Which really put it into perspective that they're not thinking about what you want to do with your life. They're just thinking about, well, you have one kid, like, why can't you have two kids? And that was weird to me, and really made me feel like I was going to get denied just on the fact that I had a child. And I remember the one defining moment in the judicial bypass process of speaking to the judge was where I knew for a fact I was going to get granted my judicial bypass was my lawyer looked at me and she said, okay, HK, tell the judge what you told me in my office. And I looked at him and I told him, because I was 14 weeks pregnant at this time, and I said, I have been skipping meals because I want to be able to make sure that my kid that I currently have, my daughter, is eating. And I cannot afford for both me and my daughter to eat. And this is why I want to have an abortion, because I can't even afford to feed the kid that I have now. And it was really interesting to see his, like, facial expressions. He was shocked. And then he almost seemed embarrassed that he had been rude to me the whole time that we were in the court hearing. And after all of that, he finally was like, okay, yeah, I'll grant you your abortion. And he, like, signed it right there. And he, like, handed it to me like he was thanking me. Like, here you go. Thank you. Like, you know? And it was just a weird experience. Whenever I left the courtroom, I felt dirty. I felt, like, nasty. I felt like I had been poked and prodded and seen in ways that I did not want to be seen. And that's how I remember my hearing with the judge. But it was also really exciting because I got granted my abortion, and I knew from that point on, like, everything was good and I wouldn't have to go through any more hoops, and I could just go to the clinic and have my abortion. So that was my experience. It wasn't very pleasant, but that's how it is sometimes. And that's why I think that these judicial bypass and parental involvement laws should not exist, because what people have to go through in these hearings are really unfair. And I also had no idea what to expect. So I didn't have, like, I didn't think, like, oh, it's going to be worse or better than this. It just kind of was the way it was. So, yeah. What about you, Anna?
First of all, thank you so much for talking about your experience. That seemed very traumatic. And I had something similar in a way that I felt like I was almost betrayed by the judge. So, first of all, the bypass hearing, the day comes. So, and I told my family I was going to go on a last minute field trip, so my attendance might be a bit messed up for the day. And then I drove my filthy car downtown to the court. I was so stressed and anxiety filled that I wasn't functioning. I was so scared because my life was already, like, already almost ruined if I was forced to have this, like, to bear this future child if I waited that long because I wasn't allowed to have an abortion or something. Then I would just, you know, completely just break down. And at that time, I was already in that mindset, just so scared and just preparing for the worst. And for me, it was held in, like, a small meeting room. That's what it looked like to me. It was, like, a long table. They were all, like, gathered in one corner, the ad litem and the judge. And my lawyer and I sat on, like, the other side of the judge. And I had to recite everything, like, the clinic counselor told me about. So for my procedure, like, my school life and my academics, as well as the mandatory information the state gives that are misinformation and incorrect that I still had to say. And I was like, I felt like I did good. Like, I memorized everything correctly. I stated everything I needed to state. I did prove to the judge that I was mature enough. And I told her that, like, this was my shot at, like, becoming myself, going to college, becoming the person that I want and living the life that I wanted to live. And I needed this. And I was confident in getting it. But, and also, like, to preface everything, she was a POC judge that was left-leaning. And I, like, had a lot of faith and hope in that sense. But her mindset was very stigmatizing because after I, you know, unleashed everything I could, she signed the paper, put down the pen, looked at me in the eyes and said, okay, I already signed your bypass, so you can get your abortion, but why do you even have sex? And that was, like, a really difficult question for me to answer because I was like, because it's natural, because, like, it's something that people in relationships do, like, this is a part of humanity. I don't know, like, I did tell her, like, I mean, it's natural, I guess, like, I don't know how else I went about it, but if I could go back, I would talk a bit more, because she already signed that form. I don't know why I was being so nice already. And then she went on and she was like, well, you girls don't even, like, feel good when you guys have sex, like, it's always the guy, it's never the girls. And I was like, ma'am, like, you're a middle-aged lady talking to, like, a little teenager, saying all these things, like, as if that's 100% the truth. And it's, like, your little bit of wisdom doesn't sound very, like, wise to me. Because it didn't happen to me like that. I was, like, I don't think, like, that's how it works. But this is, like, a choice that people make in their lives, and it is so ingrained in humanity that it happens. And I know, like, at that point, I was just, like, my brain was like a whiteboard. It was like white noise in my ears. Like, I'm like sweating. I can hear my heartbeat. And I was just like, why is she putting me in the spot? Like, she's interrogating me for something that everyone does. And I already told, like, if you guys haven't heard me in my past, like, a couple episodes, but the reason why I was even put in that position was the ignorance and the refusal to help young folks, especially me, by adults in all different types of places that could have prevented me from getting the bypass, because the bypass wouldn't even have been needed for me. I already described everything for her, but she still, at the end, had the audacity to ask me why I chose to not abstain. And I just felt that that was very, like, dehumanizing. Like, my privacy was not very private anymore. I felt like I couldn't lie to her because she was a judge. I was a student. She had so much more experience in life, and she's at this position where she is obviously the authority in the room. And it was kind of like an obligation for me to answer. And I did answer whatever I could. And I left feeling ashamed. Like, it shouldn't be a shameful process. Like, having to go get an abortion shouldn't involve any of these things. It should be empowering your body, because this is natural that people have done throughout as long as Earth has been here. So, like, that was pretty traumatic. Didn't feel right. Like, did my life not matter in comparison to a developing fetus that was smaller than, like, a nail? Just unfathomable, ridiculous. So I agree with HK and Veronica. I feel like we all went through this, like, awkward process that kind of wasted our time and put us through a lot of mental strain that shouldn't even have happened. So that was me. And what's
so I think we can all say that we felt like we were in an interrogation, like we were wrong for wanting something better for our future other than the path that we were predicted to go down on. And it was so traumatic to have someone who knows absolutely nothing about our lives to be determining our entire future. And for these people who have most likely never been in these types of situations before, to be able to make these stupid comments like, oh, like, why can't you just have another kid? Or why did you have sex in the first place? And it's just so demeaning and intimidating, because these people literally have our future in our hands, and they're able to just say yes or no based off of, you know, their own hardships that really don't compare to what we are feeling or what we are going through. And so for the last question for the group, I would like to ask, what are some tips for teens that are about to go through this hearing pass that want to study? And also, what are some words of wisdom to find strength through this process? Because it's a very emotionally draining process, and just a very time-consuming process in general. Anna, would you like to go first?
Yeah, no, I would love to talk about this because I feel like there are a lot of things that I can go back and tell my past self that I wish I would have listened more or done more or did this, you know. So for me, it was, first of all, get some highlighters and, like, go through all the booklets and stuff and actually, like, take notes on whatever the counselor tells you, whatever your lawyer tells you. Highlight those things. Take notes on it. This is a very important class and you cannot fail. So there are very important dates. For example, is how far along you are. The day of. Keep that in mind. Never forget. It is tattooed, like, on in your brain. Like, you have to keep that in mind. If you're off by a single day, you are dead meat. Like, it is, it's tough. So they have some high requirements for maturity to have an abortion, but not maturity to give birth. So what else is that, honestly, like, you are a professional in that setting. When you are in that hearing, they're asking about you and your maturity. No one knows you more than yourself. So how are they going to know you better when they can't? So really show yourself off in that time period. Obviously, don't talk about the bad sides of you. You just talk about how you know you are mature. Like, describe yourself in all the good lights, all the positive things that you've done. Remember every single competition you won, everything that you participated in, what grades, like the good grades that you got, the fancy classes that you take. Keep that all listed in your mind. Brag about them. Like, be humble, brag. You know, be like, yeah, you might not know this, but I'm actually president of this club. We're like, oh, you might not know this, but I put in X amount of hours of volunteering last year or this year. Because, like, show off. This is your interview. This is an interview for a big life-saving choice. So you're going in, like, peacock feathers out. And that, be confident. That's what I really want to emphasize. Because if you're not confident, you're seen as weak. A lot of times these judges and their ad litems will take that to look at you and make you feel even more exposed and vulnerable than you already are. And when that self-doubt starts festering in your mind, it is very difficult to get rid of that in that moment. So have no shame. This is not a shameful experience. This is not supposed to be stigmatized. Use this as an opportunity to experience what the real world is and just to show what you can take. And you can take this on. I believe in you. I think everyone in this podcast believes in anyone that's going through this process. You are strong to even reach out to people, even searching things up, hearing us to this part. I mean, there's plenty of things that you can do. And that's what I think is important. Just combine it. Combine the studying of all the things that you need to study, that you need to memorize, and also add on some little bit of confidence on top of that. And please don't be afraid to talk to people that you genuinely trust, because that would relieve a lot of the burden off your shoulders. And if you truly don't think you can trust anyone, the JDP text hotline is always there for you 24/7. So if you ever need help and you need someone to have an open ear and listen to you rant and talk and express your emotions, that is absolutely normal, and even help you along with planning this whole studying process, reach out. That's not like it's very easy, and you won't regret a single bit, and it'll help you a lot.
So I think that my advice would be to just let the judge know how this decision can really, you know, give you a future, or at least not put a stop to it, if that makes sense. So I say this because when I was, you know, explaining to the judge why I needed this procedure, why I needed the abortion, I was saying that, you know, I had just gotten into a big university, and I had just gotten, like, I was about to move cities, and I was about to get my own apartment, and I was about to go into this degree that I was really passionate about. And I think all of that sounded, I guess, really mature to this judge, and sounded that, like, I knew what I wanted for my future. And, you know, this might not be the case with everybody. Like, not everybody wants to go to college, or not everybody knows what they're doing with their life. And that's totally fine. Like, you're a teen. You're not really supposed to know. But the main thing here is that if they say yes, if they give you this permission, if they grant you this judicial bypass, it will at least give you the opportunity to figure that out, to figure out what you want to do. And, you know, having this child, having a kid while you're already like a teen, you know, with no job and no money saved, it will really make you struggle and not give you that opportunity to, you know, figure out what you want to do, or at least not struggle in the moment for.
My biggest tips for anyone. Okay, so my tips for actually going through the hearing itself: memorize the woman's right to know. I was asked so many questions about the woman's right to know, and all the things in it are false and they're not accurate at all. But regardless, memorize it as much as you possibly can, because the more you memorize it, the easier the entire hearing is going to be. Another big tip is, this is going to be a very weird experience. You have no idea what emotions you're going to have during, after, and before. There are so many different things that could happen that just could make you feel weird and complicated emotions. So plan to have a good self-care day afterwards. Make sure that you have your bubble bath ready. You have your favorite TV show already on when you get home. You have your favorite snack so that you can just go home, lay down, and just make yourself feel better, because there are so many different emotions that you feel after you get out of that hearing. And I really wish that I took the time for myself that day to just make sure I was mentally okay after everything. And then tips for just, like, going through the judicial bypass process. I wish that I did this when I was younger, but I think having positive affirmations and saying them to yourself while you're going through these stressful moments is really important. I feel like if I sat there and looked at myself in the mirror and was like, you can do this, you're smart enough to do this, you are capable enough to do this, I think I would have had a lot more confidence, and I think I would have came off a lot more mature and a lot more confident in my hearing if I made sure to affirm myself during the entire process. Because the process is made to break you down. And so you have to try and build yourself back up throughout the entire process so that when it comes time to do the hearing, you are sure of yourself, you have the confidence to do it, and you know damn well that you're going to go in there and rock it. And that's my tip. Now that we have shared all of our tips and tricks, we're going to go into our next subject, which is current news. So Texas has kind of been in the news lately because our governor, Greg Abbott, he called for a special session. And special sessions are really weird. They typically follow a normal legislative session. It lasts 30 days, and the governor has the right to call as many special sessions as they want. We are currently in a special session right now in July, and another one has been called for August. We also expect another one to be called in October for redistricting. They are targeting access to medication abortion, and they are trying to twist the narrative and make it seem like medication abortion is unsafe and that is the reason why they are targeting it. So, Veronica, what do you have to say about medication abortion?
First, with this bill, they're really trying to come after medication abortion and make it seem like it's way more dangerous than it is, and it's actually safer than getting your wisdom teeth removed. And so first, for me, the reason why I chose medication abortion is because, like, they told me first, well, first you have to take, you know, some pills to in a certain way. And also they told me it was just going to be like a really heavy period. And so I preferred that option, one, because it seemed more normal to me that I was just going to take a pill or a couple of pills and it was just going to be like a period. So it's something that I've been used to. And the second part of that is I just thought it would be more, you know, intimate and more like private if I were to do it, you know, with the support system that like knew about my abortion, which was. So, yeah, when I did have my abortion, I was in the comfort of like my partner's house and his like room, and I was, you know, just with him, and it was just like really like necessary and needed after, you know, a very lengthy judicial bypass process and like all this stress and like trying to get everything done in time, you know, trying to get the actual bypass approved. And so it was just like really great that I was able to like spend the time at home, like relax and kind of like be taken care of in a safe environment. And, you know, this is a process of this medication abortion allows people to also have the same thing, be in the comfort of their home. Like if other teens are going through the same process that they have to hide it from their parents, and, you know, they probably have like a relative's house they can go to or a friend's house that they can go to that they feel most comfortable in, then they should have the option to do that. And also this goes for, you know, domestic violence survivors that who might be going through that situation right now. Being able to have that option to have like take the medication abortion at like someone they trust's house or, you know, anywhere they can feel safe is like 1000% necessary, and it should not be restricted or be made really bad in like the eyes of the Texas legislature, right? And, you know, I said this in the last podcast that I chose the medication abortion over like the surgical abortion because, you know, to me it sounded scary, right? The surgical abortion they're going to cut into you, which is not the case. But I just would prefer that, and I prefer that, you know, for some people they might prefer the surgical option, and that's what this is about, is having the option to do to get an abortion in a safe environment and in a place where you feel comfortable.
Thank you, Veronica, for sharing your medication abortion experience. I just want to reiterate that a medication abortion is safe, But I'm confused. Why do we have a 7-week medication abortion ban when we talked about SB8 in our last episode that bans abortion at 6 weeks? We're going to have our big boss, Eleanor, come on to the podcast to explain why we have these two bans happening at the same time.
Thank you so much for the introduction, HK. And yeah, it's really confusing, right? Because didn't we just have SB8 that was signed into law at the end of May that bans abortion at 6 weeks? And now in special session, we're also seeing restrictions to medication abortion at 7 weeks. So it's confusing, right? And that's pretty on brand for the Texas legislature and anti-choice extremists who like to restrict access to abortion. So the key difference to know is that SB8 is specifically talks about restricting access to abortion at 6 weeks, and it's enforced by everyday citizens who can see someone helping someone get an abortion or know someone who went in to get an abortion. And SB8 is enforced by everyday citizens through civil lawsuits. So that's the really important key thing to remember, is that it's enforced by everyday people, everyday Texans on the street, and that it's not going to be enforced by the state of Texas, which is different from this medication restriction that we see in our current special session, which is SB4, is going to be enforced by the state of Texas. So it's really important to know the difference. SB8, which is a restriction at 6 weeks, will be enforced by everyday citizens. Therefore, the state of Texas isn't going to technically restrict access. It's going to be enforced by everyday citizens who are going to sue people who have abortions that are more than 6 weeks. And SB4, which is the restriction to medication abortion, would allow the state of Texas to restrict access to medication abortion at 7 weeks. It goes against FDA guidelines. And I think it also goes against what many people on our podcast have talked about already, their medication abortion stories, is that medication abortion is safe and it's legal, and we should not restrict access to how someone decides they want to have their abortion. With that, I'll send it back over to HK, who can close us out.
Thank you, Eleanor, for explaining that. You really made it a lot more easier to understand. And with that, there's a lot going on, but we're going to close out, and we will see you guys next month for our next episode. Thank you for listening to our podcast. We are so excited to come out with episodes in the future, and it's almost Leo season, and this is the Leo Trio signing off.